This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Chris Massaro, professional sports bettor, will join us. And we will go over Game 7 of the NBA Finals. We'll go over the Durant trade, get his thoughts on baseball. We will slowly turn the page, maybe some college football and NFL. I'm not going to really talk much football, but just maybe his thought process on getting ready for the season and just some maybe early things he's looking at as we do turn the page and the NBA season comes to an end Sunday night in what was, we characterize it as a very strange night, a night where you look in, are you going with a lot of hope that the game would be exciting, it would be fun, haven't had a game seven in 9 years, this great underdog story with the Pacers, this regular season juggernaut of the Thunder, a lot of pressure on them. Could the Pacers write one of the more incredible stories in NBA history with the Thunder, buckle under the pressure and all of these different storylines, and all of it basically gets flushed down the first 7 minutes when Halliburton tears his Achilles, and you're going to hear plenty of it in the next day or 2 days, week, whatever. Is the NBA season too long? A couple storylines you're going to hear, and I don't want to get into too much of either of them. This is mostly a betting show, even though we do, talk about some of these broader topics. But the two things you're going to hear a lot, does this OKC title have an asterisk? And is the NBA season too long, the regular season, the playoffs, which, look, it's always been too long. But with the injuries you've had in the playoffs here, and this has been a theme here for a while with the NBA and injuries in the postseason, the past few playoffs, Lillard, Tatum, Curry to a lesser extent, but he missed basically the entire Minnesota series after the first half of game one. And now Halliburton, where these guys get hurt and they don't just miss the rest of the series and the rest of the season, but they're out for next year. What do you do about it? I don't know. Look, the NBA, the NFL is about as successful, more successful than any of these other sports. If their quarterbacks, if Mahomes, Allen, and Lamar were getting hurt every postseason, it became an issue, they'd take action to fix it. I don't know what you do, and I don't see anybody, giving money back and shortening the season, things like that. So I don't know where they go from here, but it is definitely going to be something that will be discussed ad nauseum as far as OKC, having an asterisk, anything like that. There is something that leaves you incomplete, just wanting to see, hey, if Halliburton had played, what would this have looked like? And one of the tough things, not just in sports, but in life, is just not knowing. When you don't know, and you just feel you don't have closure on something, and this series is going to be one where you're not going to have closure. You're always going to wonder, what if Halliburton didn't get hurt? Chances are OKC was going to win at home, being the better team, the favorite. But chances were, OKC was never going to have to play a Game 7. Most people picked this in 5. I'm an idiot, picked it in 4. So all the chances, all the percentages, who knows? And even with no Halliburton, and I did think OKC, it's weird, OKC was flat, if anything, after the Halliburton injury. There's just a natural letdown, I guess. It reminded me a little bit, a couple things. And the Pacers led by one at halftime, so you're always going to wonder, but it reminded me a couple things. Colt McCoy in the 2009 college football title game, the Texas quarterback, Texas versus Bama, he got hurt very early on. Garrett Gilbert went in, and they hung around. It was just a weird feel to that. Anytime you have an injury in a championship event, and this early, this devastating, a star player, it just puts a weird feel over it. And the other one is the Durant one, coincidentally, because a day when Durant is traded. But Durant in Toronto, 2019, he hadn't played, for a couple series. He'd been out weeks, maybe, a month plus. He comes back with the Warriors down 3-1. He looks great early on. He's hitting threes. He's hitting shots. Then he tears his Achilles, and the Warriors actually came back and won, which was a great game. And then they lost in game 6 with Klay tearing his Achilles. So this was a strange feel, just a strange feel all night here. It felt inevitable as soon as Halliburton got hurt. I know Indy shot the three well in the first half. And like I said, OKC was a little deflated. They were a little flat. It was just a strange, strange vibe the whole night throughout, and especially the first half. But you figure OKC, it was a formality. It was inevitable. It seemed inevitable. And then OKC had the run where they hit a bunch of threes in the third. I think the third one, Jalen Williams hit a three that took a weird bounce and hopped in. That put it to 9. McConnell kept him in it for a little bit, the Pacers, but it never really got closer. And even as I'm recording this here, the game isn't over, and Indy is making a little bit of a run to maybe backdoor cover here. But the game just never felt in doubt. Once OKC got up by 5-7, I know the Pacers had all these comebacks, and it just felt like a formality here for the Thunder. And bigger picture for the Thunder, they win a championship. I don't think you can watch this playoffs and think you're looking at an all-time great team, and not just because of the Haliburton injury, but because of they had to play a game seven in this series. They had to play a game seven against Denver. They just don't feel like an all-time great team. And I don't want to hear about the regular season, the net rating, all that. That stuff can be overrated, and I've been guilty of overrating them too. It's just the NBA season, regular season, has never been less meaningful. It's just some of these teams they play hard, some of them don't. Some nights they play hard, some they don't. It's basically an 82-game preseason, so I don't take much away from the 68-14 record and the point differential and look at them as, this is not the 2001 Lakers or the 96 Bulls or the 2017 Warriors. It's just not that type of team. It's a really good team. It's a championship team, but it's not an all-time great team. And they will have a chance here to get on a run and win a few of them. And they are, the rightful short shot next year at plus 240. But we sat here where we would have sat here 2 years ago if we're doing this podcast and say, wow, Denver with Jokic, they're set up to win a couple. Last year with Boston, oh, they're set up to win multiple championships. I mean, it always looks easy in the moment, especially when you have a young team, and they are set up well. But, sports, crazy things happen. Look at the Haliburton injury. Look at all the stuff that happens in the playoffs with these injuries. It's not as simple as just roll the balls out and they're going to win a championship. And you start to play games, a lot of games every spring, it takes its toll on you. So again, rightful favorite, but we've been here before with this idea that the team that wins the championship is right there and they're, not a lock to win it the next year, but they're going to run off multiple of these. It hasn't happened in a while. 2017 into 18, the Warriors with Durant, that was the last time. Again, another coincidental Durant reference that that was the last time we've gotten back-to-back champions. We've had a different champion every year, from 2018 on here. This is going on a long time without back-to-back champions. So give OKC credit. I mean, not a lot has made, or not enough, I don't think, has been made. If you just think of the trajectory of this franchise and forget all the, moving from Seattle, all that stuff, which is a shame for the Seattle fans. 2012, they've got three MVPs, three future MVPs, all drafted, all homegrown. Harden, Westbrook, Durant. They play in the finals. They're favorite in that finals. They lose. They eventually trade Harden out of nowhere the following fall, lose Durant for nothing a few years later, and they are a franchise in shambles. It's just Westbrook. It's not much else. And they have built this slowly back up, little asset here, little move here. The Paul George acquisition, flipping him for SGA and all the stuff they got from the Clippers, and here they are on top again. So a tremendous run by the Thunder in that aspect to be at the top, fall down, get knocked down, and then get back up and build it from scratch pretty much again and become this juggernaut of a team, even if I don't think they're an all-time great team, which I don't think they are. It's still a juggernaut, and it's still impressive from a team building standpoint. It's always fun to look at these teams that win the championship. I think, like, how did it get there? You look last year, Boston, they did it with the Nets trade, Garnett and Pierce. They got a million picks for that, high picks. They fleeced the Nets, and that's how they won. Denver a couple years ago, they strike gold with Jokic, 40 something pick, second round, 41st pick, 42nd pick, whatever it was. And that's just one of the all-time, maybe the all-time great draft pick in history. And now the Thunder with their path, with trading Paul George for SGA and all the picks. And all of the different moves, little maneuvers they've made along the way here to become a champion. So congrats to OKC again, plus 240 next year to win the title. And before we get to Chris and his thoughts, the other story today, and it was weird to see the Durant trade come down the day of the NBA Finals. I know some people said he should have waited a day. League shouldn't allow this. It's taken away from the spotlight. I didn't have a problem with this. It came down noon, 1 o'clock Eastern, 7 hours before the game. We've had multiple days here to talk about this game. I didn't think it overshadowed it too much. But Durant goes to Houston, which is not surprising. It was either going to be Houston, the Spurs. None of these other teams made sense. Miami didn't make sense. A surprise team didn't make sense because, and this goes to the package, the return that, Durant, went for here in the trade. He's older, and he's going to go to a team that's championship ready or thinks they can at least compete for a championship. So the idea that somebody's going to come out of nowhere and trade for him, when they're not a title contender, and he's a moody guy. So if he doesn't want to be on your team, that's not a guy you want to trade for if he doesn't want to be there, because he's a whiny guy. He's moody. He'll sulk. He's unhappy on every team he went for. So Not that he can dictate the terms of the trade, but he kind of can, because if he lets you know, hey, I don't want to come there, I'm going to be miserable. You take his word for it, because he's been miserable his last few stops. Again, he's a very, very moody guy. Most people think that the Suns got fleeced here. I just didn't expect them to get that much. Like I said, he's older. There's only a limited number of teams interested in him. It didn't seem like San Antonio was cutting in line to trade for him with their timeline, with his age. So it's not a great return, but I didn't expect it to be a great return. Jalen Green was a nice young player. He's not a superstar, but he's talented. And the 10th pick in the draft, that's, again, it's not a lot. They got 5 second rounders. They get Dylan Brooks. It's not a lot, but it's something. And I just wasn't expecting them to get much. So Durant goes to the Rockets. The Rockets now catapult up, and I think the Rockets are going to be good. But when you look at their odds to win it next year, plus 750, I wouldn't bet that. I just think that's too short. Now, granted, had they had him in this past postseason, there's a very good chance they beat the Warriors, and there's a very 50-50, if not better, chance they beat the T-Wolves, because they've got a lot of young athletes. They've got size. They keep Jabari Smith and Eason and Sengun and all these young pieces, and you put Durant around him. And they just need shooting. They just have no half-court offense. So he's a very good fit. And then Rockets didn't give up that much. I like it from Houston's perspective. I don't buy the idea that Houston got completely fleeced here, and or that the Suns got completely fleeced and they should have gotten a lot more. I just don't think they had any leverage. And I was expecting them, if there was an over-under on expected compensation, I would say it landed right on the number. They basically got about as much as I expected them to get, which was something, but not that much. So I can't kill the Suns in that trade. The Suns now do have the 10th pick. So with the draft on Wednesday, we'll see if that, changes who might go 10th. I would imagine they probably look into flipping Green for something. There's been whispers of a Trae Young trade. I don't know if that makes sense and how you maneuver that, but we'll see what the Suns have up their sleeve again. What you gave up for Durant and what you got back was always going to be ugly. That's one of the worst trades in NBA history, considering the compensation. And you had him, if you're the Suns, you had him for 2.5 years and you won six playoff games. Just a complete disaster. Give all these picks. You basically mortgage your entire future, your entire franchise for six playoff wins. And none in the past 2 years. They were all that first year. They beat a beat up Clippers team, and they might not have beaten them had Kawhi not gotten hurt. And they won two games against Denver, and then they got swept last year. Then they didn't even make the playoffs this year. So an all-time disaster trade for the Phoenix Suns, and they get something back, but not much. So we'll see what Chris Massaro thinks. The Thunder are champions here as they are closing it out. Just a matter of the final score. Again, an ugly, low-scoring game seven. Anytime you think these game seven unders are a little too low, turns out they're not low enough, because 231 was game one, and it adjusted all the way down to 214, 215 for a game seven. Doesn't even come close to going over the total. This is a lock, cold stone lock under here, as this one is going to go well under the total here. So the Thunder are champs. Durant is a Houston Rocket. We'll talk to Chris Massaro. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, we are back. Should have been more podcast. The Thunder are champions. It was like I said in the open here, a strange night, just a weird feel with the early injury, and felt inevitable that OKC would win, which they did. To discuss all of it, professional sports bettor Chris Massaro, been on before. He joins us again. Chris, what's going on, man? I guess I'll start with this. How will you remember this game, 3 years from now, 5 years from now? To me, I kept using the word bizarre, weird. It was just a strange feel from the moment Haliburton got hurt towards the end of the game.
You know what? And we should have been on this. I know I talked with you with Matt Humans on Visa on Friday night. I mean, is it insane how under these games go, game sevens in the finals? I mean, no one has scored over 100 points in the last six or is it six or seven? Neither team has got 100 points in the last six or seven game seven finals. It's just such a crazy stat. I mean, high scoring teams. I mean, Indiana was one of the highest scoring teams the last couple of years. Obviously, the injury makes it a little different, but it is shocking that no one can get anything going. These lulls in the game. I mean, for an 8 minute stretch from the third period, third quarter to the fourth quarter, Indiana only had 2 points. It was nuts. They had 68, then they had 66. They eventually got 68, and then they didn't score for another 6 minutes. It was just insane. And the only guy that was scoring the whole time was McConnell, too. So I would call it just like you said, it's very bizarre. And I had a feeling, And I've mentioned it a couple of times this week on various places that I had a feeling that this was going to happen to Halliburton. I hope that didn't, because now he's going to miss the whole next year. You just had a feeling with Tatum, with Dame, with Steph Curry, with what's happened to Durant and Kobe in the past. It's just a shame. And you could just see it. You could see the whole thing rupture in the back of his leg in the slow motion replay. It's just too bad. That really puts a dent in Indiana's chances for next year.
I was doing the VEASAN show Sunday afternoon with Ben Wilson, and it was funny. I brought it up. It wasn't until maybe the very end, the last hour, the last half hour. I said, it's funny. We've been sitting here talking about this game for a while, talked about it on Saturday. We heard so much about the Halliburton injury going from game five to game six. It was almost not that I listened to everything between game six and game seven. It was almost like he was cured. It wasn't even a factor. Nobody was talking about it. I was like, it's at least worth mentioning that that injury is still there. I know some people were skeptical and like, oh, it's an excuse for him playing poorly. Well, it didn't look like an excuse. It looks like he was really hurt, and then it gets worse. So it's just funny how it was such a talking point between game five and six. He put up a pretty decent game six, and then everyone kind of forgotten about it and just assumed, you know what, he's fine. He's 100% healthy, when obviously that wasn't the case.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I almost feel like he forgot about it too, because he came out on fire. I made a note. He was 3 of 5. He shot 5 of the first 7 shots of the game. He was 3 of 4 from three. He had 9 points. It was 14-10. And he was shooting deep threes. He was just like in his zone. And I think he might have forgot that he might have been injured too, because he was playing all out and just, super athletic and super, up pace. And I just feel for him. I mean, that was such a killer, and I didn't see it exactly when it happened, but I heard like either Jefferson or Doris Burke, with one of them, was saying, "Oh, Halliburton's hurt." And I go, I guarantee when they go back to it with the camera, it's going to be the same situation like the Tatum, or and it sure enough, it was. He's pounding the floor. He knew he was done for the game, probably done for next year. It's just too bad. That would have been really nice to see when OKC was getting a little nervous, even though they had a huge lead. It would have been nice to see what Halliburton could have done that fourth quarter when they cut the lead to say 9 or 10 at the end. Maybe he has a couple threes in him, and maybe OKC gets a little nervous playing with their food as they've done in the past. I just would have liked to have seen what Halliburton might have done in that situation.
Completely agree. And as you were talking, I thought of the word that I didn't think of in my open, didn't think of till now, which really captures how I feel in this game. Unfulfilling. I feel unfulfilled. I feel like, just as a sports fan, not as a better, but just as a sports fan, I was so looking forward to this game, and I just don't feel, it feels a little bit like Sopranos, the season finale, the series finale, when it goes black. We're like, oh man, that's how it's gonna, it just feels, it's an empty feeling. By the way, if you missed the Halliburton injury, don't worry, just watch the rest of the game, and they showed you maybe 25 more times him getting hurt. They couldn't show that enough. It was bizarre. They just kept showing it and showing replays. If they could broadcast the surgery tomorrow, they might do. I mean, they showed it so many times during the game.
I think one of the reasons is he's like the one catalyst, I think, in the series. I mean, I granted SGA, you look at SGA's stat sheet, it looks amazing tonight. I wrote down he had 12 assists, 29 points, 5 rebounds. The guy does it all. He gets all these free throws. But I don't really remember, what's the big remembrance from OKC in the series? I guess like Jalen Williams had that 40-point game. SGA is just consistent, but if you think about it, you think of Halliburton in game one with the game-winning shot, or that posterizing dunk on the pass from Halliburton to Siakam. I feel like Indiana is more exciting to talk about, and they're obviously they're the bridesmaid tonight. But I don't have like a big remembrance of what's like the big play that you're going to go back and say, hey, remember this happened for OKC and they won the series, and remember that great. That great. I just don't know what that is. I'm not sure. It's just a consistent team. I guess the one thing that I'm going to remember the most is just the tenacious defense. And tonight in the third quarter, 8 turnovers by Indiana. And I'm not saying it's all Indiana's fault. I mean, they're just all over these guys in the passing lanes, and just they're just anticipating every single pass, and they're leading to fast break turnovers. I think at the end of the third, they had 27 points off turnovers. So all the credit to OKC. I'm just not having a memory in my mind that's going to stick for me moving forward about this series.
I'll get you. Let me get, I totally agree. Let me get your thought. The two sort of sports talk radio questions you're going to hear a lot of if you watch these talking head shows the next couple of days, the next week. And not that I watch a lot of them, but I'm sure you'll run into these conversations. The first one is, You got to fix the playoffs. The NBA season combined with the playoffs is too long. You mentioned it, Tatum, Lillard, who's the other one? Curry, and now Haliburton. It's too long. Too many guys are getting hurt. We got to shorten the season. That's one. Number two is OKC. This will be the question. Is this an asterisk title because Haliburton got hurt? Do you have any thoughts you want to weigh in on either one, either question legitimate in your mind?
I'm not going to go with an asterisk title because they went through a good West. Everyone was saying the West was tough for all year. They did have their little hiccup for Denver, but they got the job done. I call them overrated all year because they kind of are overrated. And they didn't cover this. They were 1-9 against the spread on the road. They weren't very good on the road straight up. But hey, they dominated at home. They have these big outbursts where they get a lot of turnovers and they run out on teams and they get that big spurt and they're up 20 points. So, no, I'm going to give them credit. They're a great defensive team. Are they one of the greatest teams of all time? Absolutely not. I would like to see them come back and maybe make a run at a repeat, to solidify what they did this year because I'm just not so sure how good they are. We'll see what happens with that. As for short in the season, I listened to Doc Rivers was on Bill Simmons the other day, and he was very adamant about it. And he's saying, it's probably not going to happen, but he's saying you shouldn't start the season at Christmas, where a lot of people say, but hey, maybe start at December 1st, let these guys get their legs under them, and then you have the marquee games on Christmas. Maybe you take 6 weeks off. You don't have the 2 weeks in October, the month of November. You shorten it down to say 70 games, 68 games, whatever works. Just it's less wear and tear. Maybe these guys will play more games. Maybe they can restructure. I mean, they're never going to restructure anyone's contract, but there should be something where, hey, you're going to play a certain amount of games unless you're really injured, where you get your whole contract or something along those lines. Because I really love the NBA playoffs because guys are trying hard the whole time. Everyone's playing. There's no load management. Guys are doing their absolute best to get on the court instead of games where you're seeing these guys in their street clothes when it's, even this year, there was a couple of times where some of these big matchups, Celtics Lakers guys are sitting out, or Clippers Lakers and Kawhi's on the bench, or just you pay all this money for to get the Laker tickets in the package, and then LeBron comes to your hometown and he doesn't play. So I think they have to do something. I don't want them to shorten the playoffs. I like the playoffs the way it is, but if they can shorten the regular season by 6 weeks, maybe we get guys playing a little bit more, trying a little harder, giving a better effort, and maybe we'll have less injuries. Because I saw some tweet tonight where someone said this was the eighth Achilles injury in the last 12 months, and that would be the most in the history of the NBA. There's only been five. I forget who had the tweet, some doctor or something. So maybe it was Havistro had the tweet from a doctor, but I just thought that was prudent. I think, if you can shorten the season, less injuries. No one wants to see the star players hurt. There's a lot of star players hurt going into next year.
I mean, the NBA season has always been way too long, especially a sport where we know the three or four best teams. You don't get a lot of Cinderella runs in the NBA with the nature of the playoffs, with the nature of basketball. So too many teams get in. The season's too long. The question is, like, where does the money come from? I mean, these owners don't want to give it up. It's the same reason like people think baseball season's too long, which I have no problem with the 162 in baseball. So I don't know what the answer is. We'll see what happens with that going forward. I mean, one thing they could do, it's not going to make much of a difference. I loved when the first round was best of five, just because so many of those series are blowouts to begin with. It adds a little drama. So, I mean, that's one way to shave some of it off, but they're not going to, I mean, that's a very minimal difference. It's a game here or there. So I don't know if that matters. Title odds for next year, OKC's plus 240. Boy, who the hell's coming out of the East? The Knicks, believe it or not, are the second shot at plus 750. The Rockets are tied at plus 750. The Cavs are 9-1. The T-Wolves are 14-1. The Lakers are 16-1. So are the Magic. Pacers are 18-1. Celtics are 18-1. These odds are a mess. I sent them to you earlier. Anything jump off the page to you one way or another?
Well, the two things that jumped off the page to me, and I was huge on the Rockets earlier this year, and I think I was on your show right before the
Yes.
season. I mentioned I liked Rockets division. I had them for Western Conference, which was a little, I was hoping, but I ended up doing well with the division. I had over the win total, but that is laughable, 7-1, just because they got Durant. Now Durant, every team he goes to, the team is in disarray within 18 months. So
Yes.
I'm not sure exactly if you're a Rockets fan. I tweeted out today, if you're exactly excited about this trade, you're giving away a really good teammate, a great defensive player, Dylan Brooks, a young star who's only 23 years old. Not, he's making 30 million, but you're bringing in Durant, who makes $52 million a year, he's 37 years old, and you're giving up the number 10 pick in a pretty loaded draft. You know, Paul Pierce was the number 10 pick. There's been a lot of really solid number 10 picks. So, you know, they better, I mean, they better hope they win it next year, but I could never bet 750. I do like Udoka as a coach, and Sengun's a pretty good player. I think he needs to toughen up a little bit, bulk up a little bit in the offseason. I thought that number was way too short. The one number I looked at, but I don't really play title odds. I usually play in conference. I try to do Western and Eastern Conference so you don't have to sweat out the final. But Detroit Pistons at 50-1, that caught my eye. I mean, they were right there with the Knicks. With a little more experience and another veteran player, if they could pick up in the offseason, I mean, they should have beat the Knicks. There was that ridiculous foul call, the three-pointer in the corner there. So that kind of caught my eye. I think if they maybe picked up a veteran leader, they got Cade Cunningham, they got the other Thompson brother. That's a team to be reckoned with in the future. And at 50-1 in a wide open East, that's something that caught my attention.
Yeah, I could certainly see that. The 50-1 seems like a nice number. Orlando's going to be good. Cleveland at 9-1. Maybe we're just, you know, maybe they ran into a hot Pacers team. They were beat up, and maybe we're discounting the Cavs too quickly. I know they've got salary cap issues, but that one caught my eye. But the East, man, that is going to be. If you have a gut instinct, if you have a team that you have an inkling about, even a team like the Sixers, I know Embiid's never going to stay healthy, but that's one where if you just squint, if you stare hard enough, you could see it from like 8, 9 different teams to make a case that they at least like get to a conference finals. I will say, going into the season, I can't remember going into next season, I can't remember a conference being as weak, at least perception wise, as what we're going to have next year with the East, with Tatum being hurt, Haliburton being hurt. Giannis, I guess, stays now. But can you remember a conference being this bad, a scenario where the conferences are this imbalanced? Because I can't.
Yeah, that's why it's crazy that Durant didn't try to go to the East. He could have just, I mean, he didn't want, he should have, a friend of mine today mentioned, he goes, he should have gone to try to go to Cleveland. I don't know how they would have made the money work, but.
Right.
Yeah, it's just like he's going to the West, and it's just the West is loaded, and you couldn't do anything in the West last year with Booker and, you know, the Phoenix Suns, and then, you know, you had a championship coach in Budenholzer. So, I don't know. It's, yeah, you're right. The East is crazy with all those injuries. It could be anyone. Maybe Orlando, you know, they picked up some nice pieces, and they're a great defensive team. They need some scoring. They had too many games where they only got 90 points last year. They were tough to watch. So, we'll see if they're healthy. They have a shot at it, but. With Tatum out, Haliburton out, Dame out, Embiid always out, the Knicks still don't have a coach, correct? And, yeah, the East is – who the hell knows who's going to win the East?
Last couple before we get you out of here. The Devers trade, you are a big Red Sox fan for people who can't tell by your accent. What was your reaction about a week ago now? I was shocked. I know we've talked about it a little bit, but – shocked that it happened, shocked at the timing of it. I guess looking back, you know, he wasn't happy. He's blocking positions. He's, you know, pain in the ass in terms of where he won't, will or won't play. And for a guy making that kind of money, you don't want that. That being said, tremendous hitter. Didn't get a ton back, at least, you know, on the surface here. What was your reaction when you saw the move?
Yeah, I was actually back in Massachusetts for Father's Day. I was watching the game with my dad, and he – Earlier in the game, this is the third game against the Yankees, and I said to him, like, wow, the Red Sox win today. They're only 6.5 out. They kind of have a shot at it. And, you know, he mentioned to me, he's like, you know what's going to happen? They're going to trade Devers. I go, they're not going to trade. How could they trade Devers, especially if they win today? Sure enough, they win. They pull him off the plane, and I get all these messages, and they're like, they traded Devers. And I was shocked, and I was mad. I'm like, how do you trade the biggest Yankee killer when you disrupt the Yankees, you're only 6.5 out, and you're finally the hottest the team's been all year. But now looking back on it, the guy was given a $315 million contract. He's led the league in errors at third base 7 years in a row. So I think they were kind of like, you know, we have to sign this guy because we let everyone else go. But they were having some regrets. And the fact that he didn't want to play third, I mean, he didn't want to play first. He was upset about the third base. But at the same time, if you look at Devers' side of the story, he's the face of the franchise, just got the $315 million contract. They probably should have came to him before they signed Bregman. I just think the Red Sox organization handled it the wrong way. But now looking back on it, it's probably better off to get him out of the clubhouse. You don't want all these young guys getting a disgruntled veteran, looking up to that type of situation. And you're shedding a lot of contract. I mean – this guy's best year was 2019. He hit 311. He had 54 doubles, 32 home runs, 115 RBI. He really hasn't produced close to that since then. You know, I mean, he's a couple times Silver Slugger Award, but I think most of the Boston people are just mad because they didn't get anything back. I mean, Jordan Hicks, journeyman reliever. Maybe this Kyle Harrison will be something. Just the middle of the road, 4.5 year ERA in his first 2 years. They picked up a kid from Florida State who was drafted 13th by the Giants last year, who's might have some potential. James Tibbs, the third left-handed power hitter. He was the ACC Player of the Year at Florida State, so he's been kind of hitting it pretty well in the minor leagues. But it's just nothing that the Boston fans can like grasp onto now when you're in the middle of a pennant race. So hopefully they sign somebody. You know, because they did shed all that money. So hopefully they try to make a trade or, you know, get a free agent and, you know, they can re-sign next season because they're right in it. I mean, the pitching has been turned around. They get all these young kids. They get a good clubhouse chemistry now. And if they can get Bregman back, who knows? They, you know, they're only 5 games out of it. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but in hindsight, I'm kind of glad that they got rid of Devers in that contract.
Any other baseball takeaways, futures, observations here as we're about, 2, 3 weeks here away from an all-star break.
Yeah, I'm still looking for something that's, you know, big odds. I tweeted out a crazy parlay the other day. It was like 550-1 odds. It was Braves and Red Sox that both come back and win the division. But, you know, that was before Chris Sale made that crazy play and, you know, ends up breaking one of his ribs. Unbelievable bad luck that guy has sometimes. I don't know. I was on the Tigers from the beginning of the year. I really liked how they played. I love the manager. Obviously, Skubal's a great pitcher. I took a crazy shot at him as American League MVP. Just maybe, you know, maybe something happens to Judge and Raleigh, you know, falls off being a catcher. I got that at 120-1 the other day at FanDuel. But I don't know. The baseball season, there's a lot of teams still in it, and there's a long way to go. And crazy things happen, as we saw last year with the Tigers and the Royals both making late runs. So I advise anyone that's, you know, into the futures market just to look for someone that starts playing well. You know, a little bit after the All-Star break and catch them at big odds to win a division. You know, stranger things have happened. Teams go on big runs. They win 12 in a row. They win, you know, it just happens all the time. Other teams lose 12 in a row. It's just a game of streaks. So, you know, I'm holding out hope the Red Sox can hang in there and make a run for the division. That's one of my plays I had from before the year.
Last one before we get you out of here. This is the time of year. I got to start getting going here. College football prep. NFL, I feel more, I'm more ahead in college. Granted, NFL, they don't change, the players don't change teams as rapidly, as frequently, you know, as the college football with the portal. What is your process like for getting ready for a season here? Football, college, like where do you start? How do you go? How would you suggest to people that want to get it done thoroughly but quickly just how to get ready here to bet at the NFL and college football come the fall?
Well, one of the things I like to do is you like to say, you know, as soon as the schedules come out and the times and the home and away and, you know, the bye weeks and everything, you kind of take a look at a schedule and find a couple teams if you're a futures player like I am that you think are definitely going to be in the playoffs. So the two that came to mind at good odds, because I don't like to bet 4-1. I'm not going to be on Penn State, Ohio State, Georgia, but I really thought Alabama and Clemson at, you know, 14-1 or higher at the time were two that I was going to look at based on the schedule. Alabama's going to be favored in every game except one, and the only game they're not going to be favored is against Georgia, and I think Georgia's down this year. Clemson is in the ACC. Granted, everyone questions Dabo, and, you know, they sometimes get off to a slow start, but they were playing really well at the end of last year. I thought Klubnik played great. They have so many returning players back. So those are two teams I'm looking at, you know, for futures. I start building my future parlays on those two. But overall, looking at it, one is definitely address the schedules. But two, you're going to get Phil Steele's book or Athlon's book or a book and that has an in-depth knowledge of the line play, the returning starters on the line, and the returning two deep. And Phil Steele's book is probably the best at it, where you can find out who's got enough veterans coming back. And you start looking at those teams above anything else. Who cares what ESPN says? You don't want to care about flashy quarterbacks, flashy receivers. Who has the guys in the trenches coming back? And what type of players were they last year? Were they rated high? Did you have the whole offensive line back, where the line was terrible? You just got to get into the nooks and crannies of it. It's a lot of work sometimes, but if you map it out, you sometimes find some really good value with teams who have a returning starters at the offensive line position, continuity on the offensive line with the same quarterback, same coaching staff, same offensive coordinator. That stuff goes a long way come the middle of the season when you're getting a team that you didn't think, that most people didn't think was going to be good, that you might have a little upper hand on that because they have continuity at the line, quarterback, and coaching positions.
Do you like this time of year? Do you think this is the time? Because I know a lot of people will make the point, once NBA ends, you know, it's only baseball. I don't mind this time of year. Baseball, I like having that every day. It's good to, you know, just catch your breath once in a while and just not have to stay up late and watch all of these games, NBA and NHL playoffs, especially on the East Coast. They go so late. What
Yeah,
is this a time of year you like to kind of regroup?
I do like to regroup. My bets will be a lot smaller in size until football season. All my big future stuff, all my big NBA betting, and in-game live wagering, you know, it is. It's a nice time. Take a little bit of a break, regroup, assess how you did, and then get ready for football. You know, you get all these contests, and there's so many more contests this year in Vegas with Westgate adding some. They changed up some of their contests. They're having a Survivor this year. I'm not going to be in the Grandissimo Circa one, but there's a lot of different contests, and there's a lot of excitement. There's going to be a college football contest too. So that's some stuff you have to set money aside for, because, you know, you start entering all these contests, that stuff adds up. So it is a good time to relax for people like me who enjoy horse racing. We always have that to get our fix in. But yeah, it's nice to just watch baseball and not have huge bets one way or another on them. Just, you know, just a little action to keep the beak wet, as per se, and just enjoy the baseball season and get ready for football.
Yeah, too. Because the other thing too is because once football gets here, that means college basketball really sneaks up on you. If once football starts, it's hard to play catch up and like staying up with college football and NFL. And then if you're betting college basketball, it can kind of all come at once. So this is definitely a good time to prep and just kind of recharge the batteries.
I couldn't agree. I could not agree more. And it is sad that it just, you know, there's no more games and we don't have these games to talk about. But at the same time, it's a nice break. It's summertime. The weather's nice. You know, maybe it's nice to just go outside and enjoy the sunshine one day instead of sitting inside and betting on all these games all the time. You know,
No
get a little
doubt.
fresh air.
No doubt about it. And look, sometimes you can just bet them and check the scores later too. There's nothing wrong with that. Just getting away from, you know, the anguish of sweating these games. I know some people like to sweat and they like to watch, and I do too, and track all of it. But sometimes you can just, you know what, bet it and find out how you did later. It's a little more because this stuff does take a toll on you mentally, especially bad beats or just stressing out even when you win, man. It takes its toll. It really does.
Especially with these major league bullpens. There's
Oh
nothing
yes.
more nerve-wracking than
Umpires, you get if you're betting these props and an umpire, you know, calls a pitch a foot outside, a strike, and you lose a strikeout prop. I mean, it's hard not to get tilted. It's hard not to be invested emotionally.
if you saw the Jaron Duran play in the ninth inning
Yes.
today. He
Yes.
slid by the bag, got back to the bag, replay showed he got back to the bag, and they still called him out. Why even have replay? It's like
Yep.
I don't understand.
Ridiculous. Chris, appreciate it, man. This was fun. We got to do it again soon. Do it more often. Let everyone know where we can find you.
Yeah, I'm at Real Gauge on X, Twitter, whatever you call it. Once in a while on VSiN, and me and Doug Kazarian are doing a couple times a week baseball shows on the Betting Weekly Studios on YouTube. So come check us out. We'll be doing a little recap tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on the NBA. We'll have some future odds, maybe some Knicks coaching talk, and we do some baseball shows. It's same. The hour before 2 Eastern, 11 Pacific on the Betting Weekly Studios on YouTube.
Chris, appreciate it, man. We'll be in touch. Enjoy your summer, and hopefully we'll do this again soon.
All right, anytime, Will. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you to Chris Massaro. We will be back Wednesday. I guess we will preview the NBA draft. Boy, did that sneak up on us. So Wednesday is the NBA draft, and then we will turn the page, do a bunch more baseball, football previews. It will officially be summer. That's the other thing about this game tonight, last really major sporting event until probably NFL starts. You know, you get a little golf tournaments and Wimbledon if you consider that, but you know, it's a MLB All-Star game. But as far as like a major, major sporting event, it's going to be a couple months. But football will be back before we know it. You get baseball every day. So we'll be back Wednesday. We'll do some draft. See you then. Rate, review, subscribe. Goldboys.com is the Discord.